Hello, and thanks for listening to the Kept Faith Podcast. I'm Nick McCann. I'm joined by Travis Russell.
Hey, go Padres. How you hanging in there, Nick? It's rough right now.
Yeah, it's been a tough time since our last recording.
Yes.
Fernando Tatis Jr. his health is in the balance, I guess. The trade deadline didn't go exactly how we wanted, and our closer fell apart today. So that's where we're at in Padre land. to help us unpack that, we have a second time guest on the Kept Faith Podcast, Eno Saris from The Athletic. What's going on, Eno?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for being here.
I think there was an understatement in there somewhere. We didn't exactly get what we wanted at the deadline. That was I think that was pretty brutal.
Yes.
Yeah. So you published a piece on The Athletic. I guess was that 2 days ago. The piece basically breaking down the trade deadline, and you published based on fan graphs the playoff odds and. Mm-hmm. Our boys took a dip on that scale. We were down 14% from where we were, I guess, the week before the trade deadline.
It wasn't a perfect method because Padres have been losing too.
Right, so right.
That has changed. Yes.
We were building up to it, I think.
Yeah. But I guess that had something to do with informing AJ Preller's what he was going to do at the deadline because he said. Afterwards, you know, it's not going to matter if I add Max Scherzer if the other four pitchers are not going to pitch.
Right, right. The trade deadline wasn't a complete. I mean, it's not like he didn't do anything. He got Adam Frazier, who's one of the better hitters in the National League, and Daniel Hudson. And
I had Daniel Hudson as the second best reliever available at the deadline,
right.
by my stuff metric. So. And then Frazier is a great move, the lineup along contact guy that, you know, you have for another year next year and might allow you to sit the biggest problem on the Padres offensive nights.
Yeah, we could. I'd love to talk about he's a separate genre on the Kept Faith Podcast. Eric Hosmer. We've been talking about him for about
a tag.
Yeah, he's a topic that we always go back to. He's almost got he should have his own drop before we start. But
the Haas zone.
Yeah. So you've covered Eric Hosmer for most of his career, right? And he's not the player that he used to be or what the Padres have sold us that he could be. But what are you seeing from his 32-year-old season. This is not what we want starting at first base defensively or offensively, it seems like.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because he had a decent year last year. He had one of his better years last year. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting because if you just sort of look at his ground ball rate, last year was the real outlier. I mean, it's been over 50% or over his whole career, except for last year. Hmm. And what I'd heard behind the scenes was that a couple new additions to the team were sort of data and tech forward and actually sort of spread the word, like spread the gospel of data and tech.
Yeah.
and had helped him sort of use some of those tools to lift the ball better than he had in the past. But I don't know. Was that just a lie or, you know, there's
old habits die hard.
Yeah, right. No, that's it. What's interesting about advanced stats. So you can say something like, I like Grisham a lot and I know he's been struggling and, you know, I talked to Padres fans a lot. I was just at a Padres meetup at the Oakland game yesterday.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
In the fourth inning, one of those Brandon meetups. the book on Grisham is he's been figured out or whatever. I just don't agree because he's got an elite eye at the plate, almost Votto-like. Chase rate is one of the things I love. I love barrel rate, right? Barrel rate is how hard a guy hits the ball in the right angles. The problem is that if somebody gets really good at one of those in a year, then we all say, oh, look, he's changed. He's got a great barrel rate now. He's got a great chase rate. Everything's different. Old habits die hard. And so what happens is there's always a regression. So even if he did learn something about his swing last year, the old swing is going to creep back in. You would, you know, what you call regression. You'd regress him back to what he'd done in his career. And that's sort of what he's done. Maybe with more time this year, he can sort of rediscover those aspects of the swing that was getting loft. But I think when you just zoom out and you just like Fangraphs WAR is not a perfect stat, but if you add up the last four seasons right now, he's at zero. Which is not good. Zero, like two wins per season. If four seasons end, I mean, even with that half truncated season, he should be at like seven WAR right now. If he was an average player over those 4 years. Instead, he's at zero, which is suggesting that you could call somebody up from AAA and he would do just as well.
Just as well.
And I think that actually might have been the thing that torpedoed the trade deadline, because they, with Frazier and Hudson, I think we're at like $206 million against the cap, the luxury tax. Luxury tax threshold was like 210 or 211. And I just, like, Scherzer wasn't going to happen. That was $10 million against the cap. And the only way Scherzer was going to happen is if he sent Robert Hassel III and Eric Hosmer and probably maybe one of Weathers and Paddock. Like, you had to, like, do this whole deal, and you had to pay more to get rid of Hosmer's money. And nobody's taking on Hosmer's money, man.
I know. It's just, it's never going to happen.
People are talking like, oh, if we could chip him out. Myers money, maybe, but Myers is actually being a slightly more productive player. You're talking about, he could opt out after 2022. Not happening.
Right.
You're talking about to 2026, you're talking like $60, $70 million. Mm. There's just no team that's like, oh yeah, please.
Give me some of that. Yeah. Well, so like a guy with like the profile of Eric Hosmer, where he say he does adjust his swing and it does work for, you know, a half season or, you know, that last year, that season. Is it also, are you able to track whether his adjustment is being met by a response by pitchers too? I mean, for guys that have a regression like that, are you able to wait whether or not the pitching is adjusting to his adjustment?
Yeah, that's interesting.
Or is it just guys end up going back to their old habits mainly?
There actually has been some change this year that could have affected. I mean, like, for example, last year he saw 15% sliders. This year he's seen 22%. So, like, maybe they saw that he was able to lift the four seam, and he's seen the fewest four seams he's seen in like 6 years. So yeah, there is that's the other part of Old Habits Die Hard, is just like there's going to be the adjustment back to the adjustment.
Right.
And so that's why I like young players that have made a couple adjustments, because it just suggests to me that they're going to keep doing it.
Right.
You know, I know that Paddock's early career has not been that exciting. It's been exciting at times, and right now it's in kind of a lull period. But just the fact that he added the cutter, it went away, but I think he can add it back. The fact that the curve is now like a league average pitch, this is a guy who's adding pitches. It's very different than Denilson Lamet, for example, who is just throwing fastballs and sliders. And I don't know what sort of adjustment he's made other than I'm just going to throw harder.
I just need to be healthy. Yeah.
So I like when I've seen some adjustments early on. Maybe Grisham is in the middle of something like that, but we saw a couple hits from him. I think a couple hits today. And I think he's going to get back on track with someone with that good of an eye.
Well, with him and Pham, they kind of came together, and you know, in my mind, I always put them with, Hunter Renfroe and Manuel Margot, and switching them both out, even when Pham and Grisham aren't hitting, they're always working counts longer than those two guys, those Margot and Renfroe. It seems like they really, even when they're not killing it at the plate, they are getting on base sometimes, and they are working counts, and they're just both way more disciplined than what we had before. Yeah, that's interesting about Hosmer. I don't know. The idea when we got Adam Frazier was that maybe that would just mean that Cronenworth would be playing first, when he's not pitching and
but not always. I guess you still play Hosmer against righties for the most part. Just that's just, you know, giving him the best sort of landing spot. And, you know, against let me see here, like I can do versus righties for his career.
Yeah.
Even this year, he's league average against righties, right? So, and then for his career, he's 20% above average. So I think you would expect him going forward to at least be a guy that could be, you know, 15, like be almost a league average first baseman offensively against righties. You're not going to get anything better. Like, you either got to DFA him because you can just play Cronenworth there every day, or that's how you do it. So Frazier was a little bit awkward because he's a left-hander, so you're going to play a left-hander at second to play Cronenworth, a left-hander at first, to not play your left-handed first baseman.
Yeah.
In some ways, I thought Frazier should have gone to the White Sox and Cesar Hernandez or something, who's a switch hitter, should have come over. But I guess they like that year of extra control. And the one nice thing about these Padres team is there are movable pieces. Like Ha-Seong Kim was – he hasn't been amazing at the plate, but he's been amazing defensively, and he's been a godsend for these times when Tatis goes down, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, with Hosmer, I look at a guy like Joey Votto, who's having this sort of, you know, he's 37 and he's made adjustments his whole career.
That's what I'm talking about.
He is one of the smart
different adjustments.
Yeah. Made. There's like five chapters of Joey Votto.
I love talking about him because he's like, for a year, I just decided to turn and burn and just pull everything because they were trying to get me inside. And then for a year, I tried to go oppo on everything and muscle it over the shortstop's head. And then for a year, and you're just like, this newest one, he went to driveline and he did the dead end tech thing. And he did these like speed bat training. And with a faster bat, he was like, well, I'm not going to choke up as anymore. I'm going to stand up more upright and I'm just going to hit for power because I can do that still. I've got a great eye and I can hit for power. I don't need to try and hit 290 with 10 homers, you know, but there's definitively been so many different Vados, and there's been mostly Eric Hosmer. And then like that one year he did something different.
Who have you, of the guys coming up, you know, Votto's 37, but of the guys coming up now, hitters generally, like, who's coming up that has an articulate way of expressing these ideas and that can explain it to you and say, you know, this is what I'm actually trying to apply here? Is there anybody of the younger generation that is,
yeah,
that you've noticed?
My best interviews are getting old, aren't they? even Marcus Semien is somebody that I really enjoy talking to. You know, he just recently told me at the All-Star game about hitting the top half, like thinking about hitting the top half of the ball in order to hit fast four seamers better. Alex Bregman is good. And Alex Bregman is also interesting because StatCast doesn't really love his power, but he has hit 38 homers in a season, and like he seems to have like figured out how to get the most out of what he's doing. Reminds me when I talk to him of how Jed Lowry talks.
The Jed Lowry that hit a home run off the Padres today?
Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
Juan Soto is
really
is amazing to talk to, and just also just a brilliant hitter.
Yeah.
I think that's somebody who had great opposite field power that has taught himself to pull just enough pitches to basically cover the whole plate.
Right.
So there's some guys that come to mind. I'm just looking at the first page by Fangraphs War, so I'm sure there's other people that are not on here that come to mind.
Well, you know, the Giants and the Dodgers did get better this trade deadline. So you live in the Bay Area and you're pretty close to the Dodgers, or the Giants, sorry. But that, you know, we didn't really see this coming. In the offseason, it seemed like the entire baseball world was looking at the Dodgers and Padres as being the class of the NL West. And then these Giants came around. How are they doing this? You know,
help us cope.
I mean, I know how they're doing this, but I don't. I need you to tell me to make it real. I think.
I had a piece about Brandon Crawford recently that Brandon Crawford is having like the best season of his life. Yeah,
I know. Oh, it's I know.
And it's so weird because he was always like a defensive first guy that you just hoped to hit 18 homers and that would make the whole thing hum, right? This year he might hit 25 homers and hit 300 and just be like, what? Like, how did you do that so late? And he's also the oldest shortstop in the game. Part of, I think, what was brilliant, and people didn't realize this, was when they signed Belt and Crawford and Posey to extensions, there was a fair amount of like, oh, well, they just rewarded the guys that got them there, and this is going to turn out poorly. And for a little while, it looked like that, right? Like, the guys got hurt, Posey was hurt, Belt was hurt, Crawford was declining, and it looked like, man, they're really going to have to limp to the end of these contracts. But I talked to the guy who signed them, and Bobby Evans, not Sabian, but I talked to Bobby Evans, and Bobby said, they all had good defense, man. They all had good defense. So we knew that if the offense waxed and waned or whatever, they'd at least stay on the field. You know, like, they weren't going to be DHs. And none of them are DHs. Posey, with the year off, looks amazing behind the plate, you know. Belt, even at his age, even getting hurt, is a really good first base defender. That, where Hosmer's numbers have dropped off defensively, Belt's have stayed afloat. And then Crawford is like the oldest shortstop, and his numbers aren't even that bad. Like, he looks like he might be able to play shortstop for a few more years even. So that was part of it. And then the other thing that I'm not sure the Padres are nailing 100% is the coaching staff and the player development. You know, they went and got Matt Daniels from Driveline. They went and got a bunch of people to shore up the minor league pipeline. I've talked to people in other organizations that have traded for Padres players where they've said things like, you know, you tell me things about my pitches I never heard in San Diego.
That's not ideal.
I never heard that my curve didn't have ideal shape, or I never heard that my slider was better than my curve. I never heard, like, you know, that sort of thing, you know, from the pipeline. And then, I think that's worth a lot, but that's also a bias of mine, because if you think about it, the White Sox are a team that most people say doesn't have good player development. They're kind of still behind, but the White Sox have really great players.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sometimes you just draft the right players, you scout the right players, you sign the right players. Preller is amazing at scouting. I think his team is really good at scouting and signing players. So maybe player development doesn't matter as much if you get the right players. But I think it does matter about, like, why do you have to trade for relievers? If your player development is on and sign relievers, if your player development is on, you should be just making relievers.
Right. Well, and that used to be what the Padres were known for. At least that thing. We used to have this bullpen pitching thing down, you know, kind of like the Giants always had their defense. We always had our pitching.
And now we don't have relievers away.
Yes, exactly.
To get something. Yeah.
It's bizarre how it ends up like
this.
So,
yeah, right now I wouldn't say that they're player development. I wouldn't put them in top half, at least. And then, I don't know, get Larry Rothschild. It's like,
yeah, what's up?
I'm glad you brought that up, because I was actually going to say, bring his name up. It feels like our staff is not being managed correctly.
Look at Paddock, like how much Paddock had to do on his own, and how he said, like, remember Paddock said, like, I never heard that the ride was gone off my fastball. Well, come on, man. Somebody should have told you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just think that you just look at how long it took Blake Snell to put that changeup away.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. He can't control that thing at all. And it wasn't getting good results. And it was part of why his walk rate was like 6/9. And like, I don't think I'm that smart. I do think I'm a little smart, but like, I don't think I'm that smart. I feel like the pitching coaches should be ahead of me.
Right. These blatantly obvious things to coaches, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then also just think about like what he represents. Like he's been around forever. Okay. If Brent Strom was available for my team, I wouldn't care about his age. And I'm not saying that Larry's bad because he's old, but like, there is this like new amazing crop of like college pitching coaches and like sort of driveline, you know, like independent lab based coaches that speak data and tech, I think maybe a little bit better. I don't know. There's been a little like I think most of the pitchers they acquired were better elsewhere.
Exactly. That's, and they all came from different places, and they're, the one thing they have in common is they're not doing what they used to do.
Also, I think it's also frustrating because, like, you know, you look at a guy like Paddock, who is clearly, he wants to learn more. He wants to, he wants to get better. I mean, the fact that if he doesn't, he's not, it's not translating to him. I don't know. Are you hearing things about Rothschild about the way he coaches these players?
That it would have Paddock, I talked to Paddock, and he wanted to give Larry some credit.
Yeah.
It was interesting the way he did it, though, is he said that, like, at some point we had to put the analytics away. And one thing that really resonated with me was that Larry told me to just throw the heck out of my curveball and never throw a get me over curveball.
So yeah,
you might have seen that with Paddock in the past, where he would throw like the get strikes curveball that was just like a lollipop. And then then he would struggle sometimes to bury the curveball for whiffs. This year he's been better. Like, the curveball's been decent. Like, he buries more of them. He gets swinging strikes on the pitch. It's I think it's at least a league average pitch. And so you got to give Larry credit where you're going to give, if you're going to ding him in other places. But it is interesting. He said something about putting the analytics away to get to that conclusion. I don't know. I know that Larry also came from a really analytics forward organization in the Yankees. But I also had this like high profile interview with Sonny Gray, where Sonny was like, he was just telling me like to do things that I couldn't do that didn't make me better, that made me obviously worse. And he wasn't listening to me, you know? So those are like my two or three data points I have into like how he works. So it's not enough. I don't want to say he's terrible. I don't want to hot take this. He's had success with pitchers. He's been around for a long time. He knows a lot. But I do think, like, you know, just watching Blake Snell, kind of like, man, really? Like, we couldn't get more out of him. Yeah. The Yu Darvish, like, since the sticky stuff ban has been in effect, has been struggling. Mm-hmm. I think you gotta step in. If you're seeing spin rates drop, you gotta talk to the guy and you gotta be like, okay, what's our plan out of this? You can throw more sinkers or throw more splitters, like, what are we gonna do? You've seen other guys like Garrett Cole was throwing more changeups before the sticky stuff ban was in effect. And I wrote this whole piece with Lindsay Adler. It was like, oh, Garrett Cole throwing changeups. Oh, the Yankees throwing tons of changeups. Oh, the Yankees, who got an offseason memo like all the other teams that the sticky stuff ban was coming.
Coming, yeah.
Started throwing changeups over the last 2 years more than any other team. Oh, well, that sounds like a smart idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Planning ahead,
knowing what's coming, like, you know, at least trying to add another dimension to their pitchers. I'm dinging Snell for throwing the changeup more. It's just, it's not his best pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that the Padres are counting on Yu Darvish coming back to an ace form. And I mean,
like 25 pitches. So
yes, he throws all the pitches.
Just find the 23 that are working.
Yes.
what are you hearing around the league just since the ban of the sticky stuff, the big, I guess it's a crack in the history of this season, is pre-sticky stuff or pre-ban, post-ban.
Yeah.
What are you hearing? Are people scrambling behind the scenes trying to figure out a way to make up the difference for certain guys?
There's a lot of early anger about how it was implemented, you know, mid-season. And I agree. So other people were telling me, well, this is not a rule change. And so, you know, they were cheating and they, you know, now they have, but that level of enforcement to me is a rule change. Like, to actually go and look at them like the way they do in a regimented way on the field, that sounds like a rule change to me. And so that did cause 60% of the league was down in spin significantly. And about 25% of the league was down like spider tack. And some sense of like possibly creating more injury because you're creating more fatigue because they got to hold the ball harder. Stuff that they could have adjusted to in the offseason. They could have started throwing those changeups more. They could have started working on their two seamer. They could have built up the strength to hold the ball harder. So that was the earliest thing that I've heard. I've also now seen some spin rates creep back up. And I also know that the way that they chose to enforce it is very rote.
Yeah. Very
obvious. So it's like, how long does it take a player that does have the incentive to add spin and to be better to just figure out that, like, okay, if I don't put it on my belt buckle or my glove or my hat, I'm all good.
Life will find a way. We will find a way. I mean, that's kind of how it is. It is like, it all goes back to Jurassic Park, right? I mean,
right. It's like, why are all the pitchers in baseball wearing frames now, but there's no lenses? I wonder.
Yeah. Well, one thing I've noticed, I think, is super sweaty hair.
Yeah, yeah, right?
Right, I have, yeah.
Some super sweaty-ass hair.
Brandon Crawford knew what he was doing from the beginning. Yeah. He knew how to, you know, that soul glow in there works.
Yeah. And I think maybe they're just figuring out how to like get sweat on the rosin and get some benefit from that. But and honestly, rosin is an approved substance. So, you know, get out of my face with like, that's cheating.
I've always said, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. So it's just a matter of getting caught or not.
All right. So an Astros fan over here.
Yeah.
So they got caught.
Oh, yeah. They got caught. Right.
They're horrible at it. That's the worst. They ruined it for everybody.
That's right.
So, you know, how do you think the NL West plays out? Do you think the Giants and ultimately win the division and the Dodgers and Padres end up in a one game playoff? Is that, you think it's going to hold, or what about these pesky Reds
the other thing I didn't mention about the Giants is they have the most coaches in baseball.
That's interesting.
My whole thing, they have 15 coaches, everybody else has 12, 13 or less.
Interesting.
So I think that just lets them be like super well prepared. And when people talk about like the Indians turn out pitching, I've like looked at their pitchers enough to be like, those pitchers aren't that great. But what they are is super well prepared.
Yeah.
I think they're just super well prepared all the way through the minor leagues to the major leagues. They're taught how to game plan from a very early age, and they it's breathing second nature when they get to the major leagues. So that's, I think, part of why the Giants are getting the most of what they're doing. The projected wins are 97 for the Dodgers, 95 for the Giants, and 90 for the Padres, all three in. Dodgers win it all, win the division.
Yeah, I think that sounds right, I think.
I guess that, you know, that's the meat of stuff. But what I also see when I look is that I don't think Bellinger's going to play back to his projections this year. I think he needs an offseason to prepare that shoulder and get better. Muncy, I think, you know, Muncy, Betts, and Pollock are older. So you say like, oh, they're about to get healthy and Seager back and everything. But all three of those have had injury problems in the past. They could get Seager back and then just lose two or three.
Right.
You know, Buehler's had injury problems. Kershaw, there's even whispers of like, you know, maybe not this year coming back. So it's an older team. Older teams get hurt more often. The way that the Giants win is, you know, their guys come back and stay healthy and the Dodgers lose a guy or two. I don't know how the Padres win the division anymore. I guess it would just be both those guys are hurt, you know, and the Padres get rolling again. The Padres do, one thing I will say is the Padres do have an easier schedule.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that could end up at least keeping them in the play-in game. Right. I mean, it's really the Reds. If the Reds get hot, that could be
the closest. I don't know. I just don't think there's that much risk. I think,
yeah.
I mean, the Reds are playing better recently, so I guess it's a possibility. But I just see some riding ship going on with Yu Darvish. I'm hoping that the Paddock injury is short term for him, so I could see him coming back.
We'll have Fernando Tatis Jr. back. That'd be a lot of fun for the remainder of the season.
I mean, there is that like possible piece of news where they're like, oh, we're shutting him down.
And then it becomes a question of, you know, does he go into a different category of a guy who's an injury guy who I hate saying it.
I love the deal when they signed it. The only way it could go wrong, I said, was if he's like Bob Horner. Do you know about Bob Horner?
No, no.
Bob Horner was drafted in 1982 and went straight to the major leagues. Yeah, straight to the major leagues and won Rookie of the Year. And he was like a five-category stud. Center field, power, speed, everything on the like 82 Braves. And like, I think he sort of fueled them in his rookie season to a season where people were like, whoa, the Braves weren't supposed to be good. And then he hurt himself sliding in the outfield, hurt his shoulder. There was some collusion where he ended up in Japan for a year. But if you look at his numbers, they're consistently excellent while he was in. But he pretty much had like 8 seasons worth of work and only one season where he played 162. And he was one of the guys who came up. Like I did this query that was like, here are the first like 750 plate appearances from all these guys, and it was like Tatis, Trout, like it was every like it was like all the best players, Pujols, right. Like all these guys, and then Bob Horner.
And that could. Oh man!
Well, I don't know. Well, he had the back thing, and the back thing was just like he's young and he's repetitive stress and he's growing. So I don't know. The shoulder thing could just be he gets surgery in the off season and he's 100% next year and you don't hear about it for 3-4 more years, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we're trying to stay positive about it. I hope he's, you know,
he comes back off the IL. So,
yeah. I know. Yeah. I mean, you were at All-Star weekend. I mean, he was pretty much, you know, one of the biggest names there. It seemed like a moment where
it was pretty much Ohtani weekend.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I mean, yeah. It was one of those things where, like, you know, it's one player's weekend when you're going up to the players and everybody is asking these players what they think of this other player, Ohtani. It could have been Tatis. Like, you know, it could have been Tatis. If we'd had an All-Star game last year, I would have bet that, like, you know, it would have been everybody asking them about Tatis. But
yeah,
this year it was, what do you think of Ohtani? I'm like, man, this guy is an All-Star. He played really well. He got to Denver. He's super excited to be here. And then he just spent a half hour answering your questions about Shohei Ohtani.
And hanging out with Freeman's kid, I guess that was the big thing. Hey, you know, before we get out of here, I need to bring up beer with you. Congratulations. You're going to be on a beer. Full Tilt Brewing.
Two collaborations this year.
That's great. Fun.
We did one with Old Irving called Ephus. That was a 5% light, like hazy, almost like a hazy session, which I love. I love 5% hazy IPAs. This one with Full Tilt in Baltimore is going to be more of it's Sticky Stuff is the name of it. So it's like, it's going to be dank and sticky. I think of like Pliny. I think of like kind of the old school West Coast IPA, 8 to 9%.
8 to 9. Okay.
Yeah. So this is like a real kind of a throwback IPA.
Okay.
And it's got pressure on it.
How does the process go?
Does
it start with an email and they go, hey, we're interested in putting you on the...
I'm not brewing the shit, you know.
Yeah,
I know.
This is a bathroom batch that you made?
Yeah, right. In both cases, I gave descriptors. I gave just a little bit like what I just did there was like, this is a beer that I want it to be like. These are like the hop profiles, the hops I like. This is the sort of way, the place I want you to aim. So like for the 5% hazy pale that they did in Old Irving, I said, you know, I really love Cellarmaker out here. I think Pure Project does some in North Park where these 5% hazies where it's like, I like it because I'm getting older and every beer adds right to the belly.
Yeah.
So give me a 5% hazy and I can pretend that I'm having a double IPA. But alcohol is the main source of calories.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can give me something that's 5% but has a lot of taste, then I think that's ideal. So
nice. Yeah.
Well, it's been, you know, it was a tough time for the beer industry during the pandemic. And, you know, it,
I tried to keep him afloat just by myself.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, can you tell us a little bit about the website supportbeer.com?
It's a little less important now than it was, I think, during lockdowns. But what we tried to do was just be a collection of links to how you could order beer online for delivery, or like local delivery, or package delivery. And then some places, bars and places had like a support our bartenders. Uh-huh. So we would have that link in there. I know I tried to, I gave actually to some funds for bartenders. I gave my own money to the Northern California bartenders. I'd sold Beer Graphs, my old site before. I'd gotten some of that money and I just said, pop an email to me and I'll send you $50. It wasn't a lot. Right. I didn't save anybody's cookies, but like,
that's cool.
They were probably gave some bartenders beer money. You know, it was like, if you're on unemployment, like, it's not easy to have a little bit of a good time. So, sent a bunch of money, my own money out that way, tried to send some love towards these links. And now that things are open, I've now been to Cellarmaker, North Park, and Highland Park in person.
Very cool.
Trying to get that going again.
Yeah, we hope it rebounds. Because we lost in my neighborhood. We lost my beloved Small Bar that went down.
Oh man, bars have been hurt worse than anything, man. The breweries at least could can and sell.
Right, right.
But it was Small Bar. Love Small Bar. They had a bartender that was big into baseball.
Yep. Yeah.
I used to go there before baseball games or just go and talk baseball. I forget his name, but there was definitely a baseball thing going on there. I think we lost in San Diego, we lost Hamilton's to fire. And then before that, we were already losing some bars, like Monkey Paw's gone.
Tiger's gone.
Tiger. Oh, yep. Tiger's gone.
Tornado was already gone before the pandemic, I think.
Right.
But yeah, no, that's a great thing that you're doing with that.
What are the best beer bars now?
I guess Petco Park is one of the, I don't know.
I don't know what's left.
I go to the place in my neighborhood. Kairoa is pretty cool. That's across from Small Bar. It's a New Zealand brewery, but they have other beers there.
One thing I like is Bottlecraft.
Yeah,
it's not the one in Little Italy has more seating. And has open. It's all open to the street. I like that one. I went recently to the one in North Park, and it's so tiny. You just have like three seats out front, but and it's not doesn't have the ambiance of like a real bar. But at least it's a decent selection, and you can get your to-go beers too.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Everybody, check out the Sticky Stuff when it comes out on Full Tilt Brewing and
Sports. Yeah, you can hit me up on Twitter. I'll be sending boxes out. They'll send me some boxes. I'll be sending some of that out.
I cannot wait.
Yeah. Well, hey, thanks a lot for your time and coming on and for you're a two-time guest now. That's important. That's
two
a lot of
stars on my show.
Yeah. So you could follow Saris on Twitter and check his work out on The Athletic and support The Athletic. They're doing great stuff over there. You can also follow The Kept Faith on at thekeptfaith.com and Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We'll probably be back right after the Dodgers series at the end of August. So check it out. Hopefully we'll be in a better place. we'll have rebounded. Yu Darvish will be a Cy Young back candidate. But thanks again. We'll try to get you for a third time, maybe in a few years or a year or so.
Next year. Let's do that.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. Thanks awesome. For having me.
All right, man. See you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See you guys.
Next all time. Right. Bye.
Go Padres.
Go Padres. Bye.